Welcome to the April 11th, 2024 episode of Blood Podcast, your source for innovative ideas and cutting-edge information. Our topics are based on articles published in Blood, a journal of the American Society of Hematology. Today, we'll discuss the mechanism by which JAK2V617F clonal hematopoiesis promotes arterial thrombosis, discuss how Staphylococcus aureus induces drug resistance in cancer T-cells in Sézary syndrome, and learn more about the clinical and functional features of RAC2-related immunodeficiency. We first examined data in the Blood article entitled JAK2V617F Clonal Hematopoiesis Promotes Arterial Thrombosis Via Platelet Activation and Crosstalk by Wenli Liu from Columbia University Medical Center in New York, New York, and colleagues. The JAK2V617F mutation is a gain-of-function variant that increases hematopoietic cytokine signaling in multiple blood cell lineages. It has been identified as the main driver of myeloproliferative neoplasms, leading to activation of the JAK-STAT pathway and a significantly increased risk of atherothrombosis. JAK2V617F has also been implicated in the development of clonal hematopoiesis of indeterminate potential, or CHIP, a condition that mostly affects the elderly. In fact, JAK2V617F is one of the most common CHIP mutations, along with TET2, DNMT3A, and ASXL1 mutations. Studies to date have shown that clonal hematopoiesis is an independent risk factor for atherothrombotic cardiovascular disease and premature myocardial infarction. Clonal hematopoiesis in patients harboring the JAK2V617F mutation, simply known as JAK2V617F CHIP, is also associated with an increased risk of venous thrombosis, ischemic stroke, and splanchnic vein thrombosis. Despite these insights, there are currently no approved therapies to reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease in clonal hematopoiesis. Recently, the authors demonstrated increased atherosclerosis and necrotic core formation in mice expressing JAK2V617F selectively in macrophages, as well as in a mouse model of clonal hematopoiesis. They also showed that selective expression of JAK2V617F in erythrocytes promotes atherosclerosis. However, the impact of JAK2V617F CHIP on thrombosis has not been assessed in animal models, and the causality remains unknown. In the current study, the authors aimed to study in more detail the impact of JAK2V617F clonal hematopoiesis on thrombosis using a murine model of clonal hematopoiesis. They used bone marrow transplantation within hyperlipidemic LDLR-deficient recipient mice to generate a CHIP murine model with a low mutational burden and no MPN-associated phenotypic changes. The FECL3 injury thrombosis assay was used to determine the time to total occlusion. The authors first carried out a meta-analysis of the effects of JAK2V617F CHIP on cardiovascular events in three large independent cohorts and found a 2.4-fold increase in incident cardiovascular events in association with JAK2V617F CHIP. Experiments conducted in the CHIP murine model showed increased platelet activation and accelerated arterial thrombosis. Importantly, both JAK2V617F mutated and wild-type platelets showed enhanced thrombin-induced activation in this model, suggesting crosstalk between mutant and wild-type platelets, and highlighting the importance of studying somatic mutation diseases in a chimeric as opposed to pan-mutated setting. Next, the authors assessed blood platelet-related kinetics in JAK2V617F clonal hematopoiesis mice, and found that the platelet production rate was markedly increased, leading to increased young platelet fraction and quantity, and an accelerated platelet turnover. In addition, platelet size was increased to determine whether JAK2V617F expression in the megakaryocyte platelet lineage contributes to platelet activation and accelerated arterial thrombosis. The authors restricted the expression of JAK2V617F to megakaryocytes and platelets in VFGP1BA mice. Compared to controls, VFGP1BA mice showed an increase in platelet counts, mean platelet volume, and an increased fraction of young platelets. Similar to JAK2V617F clonal hematopoiesis mice, VFGP1BA mice showed enhanced platelet activation and accelerated arterial thrombosis. Additional experiments revealed that JAK2V617F platelets showed a 2- to 3-fold upregulation of COX-1 and COX-2, particularly in young patients, with elevated CPA2 activation and thromboxane A2 production. In comparison to controls, conditioned media from activated JAK2V617F platelets induced greater activation of wild-type platelets that could be reversed using a thromboxane receptor antagonist. Importantly, the administration of low-dose aspirin ameliorated carotid artery thrombosis in VFGP1BA and JAK2V617F clonal hematopoiesis mice, but not in wild-type controls. The authors concluded that these results demonstrate accelerated arterial thrombosis and platelet activation in JAK2V617F clonal hematopoiesis, with a major role of increased reticulated JAK2V617F platelets, and suggest a potential beneficial effect of aspirin. In an accompanying commentary, Lina Benajiba from Paris Cité University in Paris, France, notes that the study by Liu and collaborators addresses an important physiopathological question with a potential clinical impact on patients harboring JAK2V617F CHIP. The authors suggest an interesting paracrine mechanism of activation of wild-type platelets through thromboxane-mediated crosstalk with JAK2V617F mutated platelets, which leads to CHIP-associated arterial thrombosis. Specifically, the authors demonstrate a reactive oxygen species-mediated increase in cytosolic phospholipase A2 activation, as well as the upregulation of COX-1 and COX-2 expression, which leads to thromboxane A2 production by JAK2V617F platelets. In turn, the production of thromboxane A2 leads to the activation of wild-type platelets. Importantly, although the JAK2V617F CHIP models with 1.5% and 20% allelic frequencies showed increased thrombosis, they did not show increased bleeding. Benajiba notes that collectively, these findings pose the rationale for the potential use of aspirin to prevent arterial thrombosis in JAK2V617F CHIP individuals, and call for additional translational and clinical studies evaluating the mechanistic underpinnings of the JAK2V617F wild-type crosstalk and the potential risks and benefits of aspirin use. Next up, we'll discuss the findings from the Blood article entitled Staphylococcus aureus induced drug resistance in cancer T cells in Sézary syndrome by Chela Krishna Vadivel from the University of Copenhagen in Copenhagen, Denmark, and colleagues. Sézary syndrome is a malignant disorder of T cells that belongs to the category of cutaneous T cell lymphoma, or CTCL, a subtype of non-Hodgkin lymphoma. CTCL is characterized by an increased susceptibility to bacterial infections, which significantly contribute to disease-related morbidity and mortality. It is believed that skin barrier defects induced by malignant cells, serve as the likely points of entry for bacterial infection. The etiology of CTCL remains unresolved. Studies to date have linked dysregulation of JAK-STAT, PLC-gamma, and NF-kappa-B signaling to malignant cell proliferation, apoptosis resistance, and inflammation typically observed in CTCL. For many decades, Staphylococcus aureus has been suspected to play an important role in the pathogenesis of CTCL based on the observation that the skin of many patients with severe disease is colonized by S. aureus. Moreover, treatment with antibiotics has been reported to have a beneficial clinical effect in Sézary syndrome and erythrodermic mycosis fungoides. However, the mechanism underlying the effects of S. aureus on CTCL pathogenesis remains to be fully elucidated, as does the impact of S. aureus eradication on disease activity and treatment outcomes. The purpose of the current study was to evaluate the effects of staphylococcal enterotoxin-producing Staphylococcus aureus on the development of drug resistance to common therapeutics in CTCL patients. The study included 20 patients with Sézary syndrome, peripheral blood mononuclear cells, or PBMCs, from the blood of 17 patients with Sézary syndrome, were isolated and used for experiments. Staphylococcus aureus was isolated from CTCL patients and validated for expression of staphylococcal enterotoxin. A series of experiments, including flow cytometry, apoptosis assays, and single-cell indexing of transcriptomes and epitopes, or site sequencing, were used to assess the effects of staphylococcal enterotoxin on CTCL patients. The findings revealed that S. aureus enterotoxin can induce drug resistance of Sézary cells to commonly used therapies for CTCL, including histone deacetylase inhibitors such as romidepsin, vorinostat, and riminostat. Moreover, S. aureus enterotoxin obtained from lesional skin of CTCL patients, or recombinant S. aureus enterotoxin, blocked romidepsin-induced apoptosis of Sézary peripheral cells. The protective effect was not observed with supernatants of endolysin-treated S. aureus enterotoxin-producing S. aureus, or with supernatants from S. aureus that did not produce S. aureus enterotoxin. The protective effect of S. aureus enterotoxin was also observed with DNA damage-inducing drugs, such as doxorubicin and etoposide, as well as with the ATP synthase inhibitor, oligomycin. A closer look at the mode of action revealed that S. aureus enterotoxin did not produce drug efflux, but activated specific pathways. Namely, site sequencing experiments revealed induction of NF-kappa-B, JAK-STAT, and TCR-BCR signaling in Sézary cells treated by romidepsin upon exposure to S. aureus enterotoxin. These pathways have been previously associated with drug resistance. In support of this mechanism, the authors observed that the NF-kb inhibitor bortezomib abrogates the S. aureus enterotoxin-induced drug resistance. Also, inhibition of TCR signaling by protein tyrosine kinase-like inhibitors, or the protein kinase C-theta inhibitor sotrasorin, counteracts NF-kappa-B activation and the S. aureus enterotoxin protective effect. Similarly, mutations in MHC class II binding sites of staph enterotoxin type A and an anti-staph enterotoxin A antibody block induction of resistance. Finally, SiteSeq data demonstrated that staph enterotoxin stimulation induced cytokine-mediated JAK-STAT signaling in malignant and non-malignant T cells. Inhibition of JAK-STAT signaling only blocked rescue in patients where malignant T cell survival was dependent on S. aureus enterotoxin-induced cytokines, suggesting two distinct ways that S. aureus enterotoxin can induce drug resistance. Taken together, these findings suggest that Staphylococcus aureus enterotoxins cause treatment resistance in patients with Sézary syndrome, and that antibacterial therapy may improve the outcome of cancer-directed therapy in patients harboring S. aureus. In an accompanying commentary, Jean-Philippe Merlioz from the University of Bordeaux in Bordeaux, France, notes that the findings of Vaudevelle and collaborators point to Staphylococcus aureus as a promoter of CTCL progression and therapeutic resistance. Targeting the adverse effects of S. aureus is an important part of improving patient outcomes and quality of life, since severe pruritus is a major symptom in patients with CTCL, especially in Sézary syndrome. Moreover, in patients with CTCL, S. aureus may induce pruritus and subsequent skin barrier damage, favoring generalized infections, a major cause of death. In line with these latest findings, a recent study found microbiome disequilibrium with a predominance of S. aureus in the lesional skin of a large cohort of Asian patients with advanced CTCL. These authors identified the same S. aureus strain between lesional and non-lesional skin, with a predominance of staphylococcal enterotoxin B compared to staphylococcal enterotoxins A and C. Merlioz believes that additional studies should evaluate whether staphylococcal enterotoxin B and staphylococcal enterotoxin C have similar effects as staphylococcal enterotoxin A on CTCL cells. He further notes that, collectively, these findings point to the need for skin bacterial culture to evaluate therapeutic resistance in CTCL clinical trials and support the use of combination therapy with antibiotics, especially for patients with refractory or advanced CTCL. At this point, preventing lesional cell colonization at the early stages of CTCL by long-term aggressive antibiotic treatment could be risky due to the life-threatening risk of selecting antibiotic-resistant strains. Non-antibiotic agents, such as the engineered endolysin XZ700, should be evaluated further in combination therapy, since it was effective in preventing ex vivo colonization by S. aureus of both healthy and lesional skin. In the final part of today's podcast, we will review an article in Blood entitled Clinical and Functional Spectrum of RAC2-Related Immunodeficiency by Agnes Donko from the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, and colleagues. RAC2 is a highly conserved RAS-related GTPase that belongs to the RAS homolog subfamily of proteins. The expression of RAC2 is limited to immune cells and lymphoid tissue. Under basal conditions, the majority of RAC2 is held in an inactive state, bound to a guanine dissociation inhibitor by C-terminal guanylyl guanylation. Upon activation by G-protein-coupled receptors, or receptor tyrosine kinases, RAC2 releases GDP and binds GTP, undergoing a conformational change to an active form. In this way, RAC2 acts as a molecular switch that regulates many downstream cellular functions, including superoxide production, F-actin polymerization, and modulation of calcium signaling. The first RAC2 mutation, D57N, was reported in an infant with severe bacterial infections, impaired wound healing, and defective neutrophil chemotaxis. The mutant protein in this patient failed to bind GTP, acting in a dominant negative manner. Since this first clinical description of the D57N RAC2 mutation in the year 2000, the phenotype of RAC2-associated pathogenic variants has expanded considerably. Two siblings with homozygous null mutations presented within the first 2 years of life with recurrent sinopulmonary infections, hypogamma globulinemia, and lymphopenia. More recently, in 2021, four infants presented with sepsis in the first week of life and were reported to have dominant, constitutively active mutations G12R and Q61R. Regardless of genotype, most patients had significant T lymphopenia and decreased recent thymic emigrants. In line with these findings, RAC2 mutations were recently classified as leaky atypical severe combined immunodeficiency. In the current study, the authors analyzed the spectrum of RAC2 mutations and clinical characteristics of 54 patients from 37 families, including 23 previously reported patients. Patients were recruited to the study after a RAC2 mutation was discovered at clinical and research centers in Canada, Europe, Asia, New Zealand, and the United States. They were grouped into three different groups based on presentation. 5 patients had neonatal severe combined immunodeficiency, or SCID. 5 had infantile neutrophilic disorder, resembling leukocyte adhesion deficiency, or LAD. And 44 had later onset combined immune deficiency, or CID. PCMV6 expression factor for RAC2 wild type was used for targeted mutagenesis to produce patient-specific RAC2 mutations. Using heterologous expression systems, the authors assessed the production of reactive oxygen species, GST-PAC1 binding, AKT phosphorylation, and protein stability. Confocal microscopy was used to assess membrane structure and protein localization. The findings revealed that the disease correlated to RAC2 activity. Constitutively active, RAS-like mutations caused neonatal SCID. Dominant negative mutations caused LAD-like disease, while dominant activating mutations caused CID. Most patients exhibited significant T and B-cell lymphopenia with low immunoglobulins. Myeloid abnormalities included neutropenia, altered oxidative burst, impaired neutrophil migration, and visible neutrophil macropinosomes. Upper and lower respiratory infections and viral infections were common among 42 patients with CID for whom clinical data was available. Furthermore, the authors were able to identify 23 distinct RAC2 mutations, including 15 novel variants. Most identified mutations affect 3 domains: the guanine nucleotide binding P loop and switch 1 and switch 2. All tested RAC2 mutant proteins exhibited altered function, and no single assay was sufficient to provide a thorough assessment of the functional consequences. Moreover, different gene variants had different effects on the stability of the RAC2 protein. The variants harboring constitutively active mutations, Q61 and G12R, displayed increased stability, while most other mutant RAC2 proteins exhibited decreased stability. Pathogenic variants in the switch-1 region inhibited superoxide production. Clinically, patients with mutation near the switch-1 region, such as C18W, I21S, and G30R, presented with bacterial infections usually seen in patients with chronic granulomatous disease. Switch-1 region mutations also increased RAC2 binding to PAC1, which regulates cytoskeleton remodeling and AKT phosphorylation. Conversely, the switch-2 region variants increased superoxide production, enhancing RAC2 binding to PAC1 and phosphorylation of AKT. At the cellular level, switch-2 region mutations correlated with an increased macropinosome formation and membrane ruffling. Taken together, these findings indicate that RAC2 mutations cause a spectrum of immune dysfunction, depending on the functional consequences of the mutation, ranging from early onset severe combined immunodeficiency to later onset combined immunodeficiencies. In an accompanying commentary, Fabien Touzeau from the University of Montreal in Quebec, Canada, notes that the study by Donko and collaborators reports the clinical and biological features of a unique cohort of 54 patients from 37 families with RAC2 pathogenic variants. It also recognizes RAC2 dysfunction as a cause of SCID almost 20 years after it was first described. Moreover, The study shows that most identified mutations affect three distinct domains of the RAC2 protein, the guanidine nucleotide binding P loop and switch 1 and switch 2. These regions play important roles in RAC2 function by binding to guanidine nucleotide exchange factors, which drive GDP to GTP exchange, GTPase activating proteins, which accelerate GTP hydrolysis, as well as downstream effectors. Using functional assays and heterologous expression, the authors demonstrate a wide range of functional deficits caused by RAC2 pathogenic variants. Although RAC2 dysfunction was first described more than 20 years ago, the study by Donko and collaborators is the first to offer a state-of-the-art clinical and biological assessment of this complex condition and its phenotypical spectrum. Tuzo concludes that a closer look at the natural history and biological intricacies of RAC2 deficiency was overdue, and that the latest findings will likely have an impact on patient management down the road. For a list of additional authors, as well as more detailed articles and commentaries on which this podcast is based, please go to bloodjournal.org. Be sure to join us next week for another episode of Blood Podcast. Thank you for listening.